Hi, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, July 29th, 2002, and Norm Hobble is starting a series, Letters from the Earth, and this session is called Connecting with Earth as Parent. This is tape number HAN 2002-01. Now let's join Norman, for this session.
From Australia, and it may very well be that every once in a while you don't understand my language, you know, my accent, being from Australia. Now, I'm not closely related to Crocodile Dundee, even though I have this here, and I injured my arm fighting off crocodiles and so on. Crocodile Dundee used to say all kinds of things which really were just mostly for an American audience when he was on this, throwing shrimps on the barbie.
Destroying our myth.
Yes, that's right. We actually don't have any shrimps. We just we have prawns instead. So it was all Americanized just for the audience here and the publicity.
What's the difference?
They're the same thing, but they have different names. You're Australian, you're American. I made lots of mistakes when I first came to America, trying to, be friendly and nice. I remember the very first week I was here, I met some friends and they had a little baby. And the baby still looked so cute. So I said to the lady, I said, "Would you mind if I nursed the baby?" She said, "What kind of a man are you, So... there's a long history of mistakes that one makes, some of which are not repeatable, being an Australian in this country. And so that you know, I lived in America for almost 20 years, and then I left and went back to Australia in 1974. And I've been back in Australia since then. And I'm still a member of the Lutheran Church. And when I do my memoirs, it'll be called Why Are You Still a Lutheran, given my history. What I want to do today, and during this sequence for the week, is to do something not quite that I've actually done before. I mean, you were around listening to my Bible studies 30 years ago, and the last time I did an announcement here was when I was on the staff 30 years ago, which is a long time. And in that time, a lot of things have happened, but one doesn't stop learning, and one doesn't stop exploring, and one doesn't stop trying to find answers to questions that previously didn't even ask. We ask lots of new questions, and in the last years I've begun to ask new questions about Earth. I say Earth rather than the Earth. Earth has a name. And the questions I've been asking are, some that, in a sense, I might even be exploring elements of it with you, because the problem is we've always read the Bible not from the point of view of Earth, but from the point of view of human beings, or the point of view of God, or some other point of view. So what I'm interested in this week is to explore with those who want to some of the things that connect us with Earth, and I have a sort of plan. I'll just put the plan up, and it runs something like this. Relatively simple plan, but it's one I want you to help me with, and I hope as we go through it, and remember I'm quite open to you interrupting me at any time or throwing in your ideas or saying, "Hobble, shut up." And the basic plan is very simply this. The whole concern is, how do we once again connect up with Earth? I want to begin with some reflections on what I call deep or hidden or forgotten connections that already existed in our past. The second part of it is disconnections. How are we actually disconnected, and why are we disconnected from Earth? The third part each time will be look at some Bible texts which I have called Earth Files. Call them Earth Letters if you like, Earth Files. texts that we rarely look at. In the Bible study this morning, we had the stories about God and human beings. I want to look at another set, a text that we rarely look at, called Earth Texts, Earth Files. They are texts that you might have seen before, but you haven't seen them, with Earth as the main character. And last, but asking the question, how can we reconnect? And tonight, the liturgy, the Vespers, will be a ritual of reconnecting with Earth. Very simple ritual, but it will make you reflect, I hope, on precisely what is going on and why we are the way we are. Now, to start with this, I want to read a little bit of a letter that I wrote to Earth. This is a letter to Earth that I wrote, a little bit of it you saw on the notice board. I read it because I want you to get a feel for the fact that I'm not just doing Bible study, I'm putting the Bible study in a context. When you do your Bible study, it's the whole Muslim, Christian, Jewish dialogue context out of which you read. I want to read the Bible out of a different context, out of the context of what the heck we've done to the earth, what we've done to this earth. And in order to make it meaningful and fresh in you, I've written, to start with, some letters to Earth. And so I want to read a little bit of one letter that I wrote, and at the end you may want to write a letter of your own. This is a letter that I wrote, and it will start the discussion before we ever get to any of the Bible texts. Dear Earth, may I come home? I would like to make contact to know you again. It's been a long silence. When I was a boy on the farm, I had a genuine love of the land, the bush, the hills, the rivers. I remember my father taking me into the dry fields and walking slowly across the ground prepared for sowing before the rains came. He would kneel down and take a handful of soil, hold it in the palm of his hands for some time, and let it run slowly through his fingers back to the ground. In that moment, he seemed to connect with the very soul of Earth, of the soil, as he said to himself, "Good Earth, this is good Earth." As I reflect on that experience, it seems to me my father was talking to you, Earth, though we probably never admit it. My brother and I felt at home in the dense scrub, wandering among the laughing kookaburras, or deep in the growing grain. We were close to you, Earth, without ever articulating our kinship. In spite of Sunday sermons that directed our eyes toward heaven, we were living with our feet on the ground, in the ground. We loved you, Earth, even if we never expressed those feelings consciously. In recent years, I've come to realize that maybe, Earth, you are my parent, my biological parent, the source of my life, my very existence as a human being. Now, what I'd like to do to start with is just to ask you to reflect back to your childhood. How many of you were born on a farm or lived on a farm? Like I did. Others may not. You may have gone into places like Holden or the bush. Do any of you have any moments when you felt close to Earth, to the trees, to the animals? Any moments when that something where you sensed Earth was more than just your surroundings? Moments when you felt close to Earth. Anybody have any memory of that happening to me? Or am I just an odd character from the Australia?
Well, I think as kids we used to just lay out in the grass.
Yes.
And probably look up the sky and the trees and I don't know what we thought about, but I mean, there was a real good feeling there of some kind.
That's right. Lying, that's right. Often other people just lie on the ground and feel the earth. Feel the sense of life in the earth.
Isn't that why we like to go camping as well? Because
you, all right, why do you like to go camping?
You just feel like you're closer to nature than you are.
Yeah. Do you feel at home when you're...
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a very important concept. To be at home means that you're with those people you love. And what I'm exploring is to the first of these, I'm exploring the idea that in a certain sense, Earth is really a parent. I'm not using the term Earth Mother. I want to avoid that because of all sorts of history. But I want to talk about Earth Parent. Earth as a parent. And avoid that other association. You follow me? Now, you're saying you felt at home. All right, that's another way of saying it. All right.
I remember when I was a kid in Wisconsin, the yards had night crawlers.
What are night crawlers?
Yeah, the big worms.
Oh, worms.
And you would go out at night and with a flashlight and you'd see them and you'd pounce on them on your hands and knees and pull them out and save them for fishing. But it was just being on the grass and with a flashlight and just...
How many of you played in mud puddles when you were a kid? I did not. We just never wore shoes until we went to school. Yes.
We spent time when I was a kid, more or less, subsistence environment. It was very meaningful for me.
Where was that?
Well, it was you'd hunt and fish and.
Yeah.
And what you could grow, you could eat.
Yeah. You felt close to it.
Folks were very, very conscious about that.
Yeah.
I grew up in Chicago, which...
There's not a lot of trees.
No. But I've always felt protected in the earth and animals and birds.
Yeah. Anybody else? Yes.
In a strange kind of way, new mown hay, alfalfa.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Just the smell of that.
Mm. Yes, it feels good, doesn't it?
The goodness of the clover and the alfalfa.
Yeah. How many of you ever been in a dusty climate like this, further in outback, and it hasn't rained for months, and then suddenly it rains on the dust?
Nebraska.
There's something, you know, the smell. There's a kind of rich, positive smell, and you feel good at that moment when that happens. You miss it. Yes?
My brother and I used to climb the pine tree in our backyard. We'd see how high up you climb it before it started to really bend and sway. And then you just sit up there and listen to the breeze go through and sway back and forth with the tree. And the smell of pine always reminds me of that. We used to yell that terribly, of course, because we'd come down and be covered with sap.
Resin.
Ruin all our clothes.
Yeah, good. Anybody else? The more I meet with people, the more I realize that sort of behind what has happened in our life, we have this feeling of kinship with Earth. Even if we've got all sorts of other religion, and even if we've got a whole lot of history of Christianity, still behind it all is a sense of kinship with Earth. And I've lived in Australia, and I've gotten to know quite a number of the indigenous Australian people and have worked with them. And I began to realize just how close, how they relate to Earth genuinely as a spiritual parent, as a source of life. And that in every way they link, especially with the land or the sea, wherever they are. And we have tended to find ways to disconnect. But just to give the illustration from my Aboriginal connection, my mentor is a man called George Rosendale. He had a fifth grade education, but was a Lutheran pastor. Mm. And he, a lot of stories, but he tells the one story that I will always gives me goosebumps, because I then understood how he was bound spiritually to the land, to the earth. When he, but they'd been taken, his family had been killed and all the rest of it. But when his mother gave birth to him, she went out from the mission station to a little tree. And she gave birth under that tree, and that tree became sacred to him. But, of course, they'd been stolen and taken from an area a long way away, like part of your Native American people had been taken, put in a reservation. But in order to make sure that the spiritual connection that's sustained between where he was and the place where they came from, their genuine home place, the mother takes the afterbirth and buries it in the ground. And through the blood of the afterbirth, the spirit then returns back and links him spiritually to his home place. Now this sense of kinship and bonding with the land and the earth and our earth is something we've mostly lost. And time again, one thinks about what's happened in Western thought so that we are free to do what we've done to our earth. Different ways in which we've disconnected. Now, each day I'm going to try and pick up one of the ways that we've disconnected. But the one I want you to think about today, just for the moment, is the disconnection between what we call culture and nature. What have we said about here is earth and here is humanity? If this is earth, humanity and human beings and culture are seen to be what? Quite separate and distinct. We've separated them out. Ever since the Enlightenment, we've progressively said, we are superior to, we are above, we can do what we like with the natural world. And this process of disconnection, this disconnection that happens, is something we've simply absorbed partly because we are Western people, and we've taken it over, and we've assumed that somehow human beings are not really necessarily of the same order as the rest of nature. Now the biologists and so forth are going to tell us different stories today, but we have inherited that in the Western world, and we could talk a lot more about it. We have said that Earth and the natural world is just material, whereas human beings have got a spiritual dimension, and we've made these divisions, the divisions which have meant that we've disconnected ourselves from earth. Now maybe there's some other ways in which you've seen that disconnection happen, just quickly. It's happened all through our Western world.
Well, some of us grew up with this idea, this world is not my home, I'm just a passing through. So all of our songs tended to downplay the earth and play up heaven.
Heaven is my real home. Earth's just... And tonight we will sing a new song. I mean, we'll sing a revision of a song that we used to always sing. I take songs that are negative and turn them into positive. You know the song. Guide me, O thou great Jehovah, pilgrim through this barren land. Says it all. So I've changed the song. Now it's quite different. We'll sing that same song, but everything reversed tonight. We're an affirmation of earth instead of a negation of it.
Maybe you get into this when you talk about earth files, but I think we go back to the passage in Genesis where it says have dominion over the earth, and we've misinterpreted that, I think, and abused.
I'm going to talk about that another day in detail, but you're right, that's one of the problems.
I hope tomorrow, because we leave then. I hope after tomorrow.
I'll do it tomorrow. I will include it tomorrow, but okay. It's not necessary. We won't get to that. It takes me a little while to go through that passage because it's a problem. But you're right, that's the kind of separation. Now, I'm going to risk something that I wonder how you're going to respond to it. But one of the things that struck me is that not only because of that passage, but a lot of other things, we've got to the point where we just assume certain things and we don't even hear what we're saying. Now, the first thing I want to say before I say this is, I want to say, for me, adoption is a very positive and important thing. It's a powerful, significant, and wonderful thing that we can do. So I'm not, in any sense, wanting to say that adoption is negative. But I want you to think about what has happened in baptism. Now, there's also another wonderful, positive ritual. But some time back, I was sitting listening to our baptism ritual. And they were talking about how everybody was corrupt and all the rest of it. And that you were baptized, and in the act of baptism, it said, I was adopted into God's family, adopted into the church. So I became one of part of the family of God. God becomes my father, and I am part of that family. And then I ask the question, if I'm adopted into God's family, what's the family I came from? Who's my other parent? My biological parent? And in a sense, it suddenly began to realize that we had not even bothered to ask that question. We may say, oh, God has created us all. But there's a sense in which, the more I thought about it, the more I began to realize that Earth is my biological parent. I come from Earth in every way. And when I'm adopted into the family of God, that's a spiritual family. And somehow I forgot, or we've left behind or ignored, that other parent, which is still a wonderful, positive, nurturing thing. And you think of it, everything in your life has been nurtured physically, and maybe more than that, by Earth. And I link that up with what I've been studying from biologists and ecologists and everybody else, and I now realize that absolutely everything that I am is Earth. You are 80% water, my friend. And where does the water come from? Earth. You are all this, you breathe in. Out, in, out. I breathe. And where does the oxygen come from?
Atmosphere.
And where does it get into the atmosphere from?
Huh?
From the trees, which are in the earth. Everything I have that I breathe and am comes from the earth. The water, the food, the oxygen, the molecules of water that come down that mountain will end up being in somebody's body. Everything I am and have is from Earth. And it's that biological, I'm calling it biological parent, nobody else has done this before, and I may be an idiot doing it, but there's a sense in which I want to raise our consciousness to our total connection with Earth as something more than just the stuff where we live. It's something far more. It's very much who we are. We are part of Earth, and Earth is part of us. And what I'm using is expression parent to try and express that. That Earth is my parent, my biological parent. I'm not saying I shouldn't be adopted into the family of God. Far from it. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, I am still also a child of Earth.
Well, we use the word Mother Earth many times.
We do. And I've not used the word mother, I'm simply saying parent. I understand. But we've tended not to use Mother Earth as a standard expression inside the Christian Church. A few songs have, mostly it's not been primary. So what I would like to... people want to comment on just what I've just said. Does this offend you if I say what I just said? Then I'm saying that in a sense we have two parents. We have God as the parent, and we have Earth as a parent. I'm not saying God, Earth is God, but I'm saying there are two parents. In a sense we cannot, if we're going to live in this world and make this world a place where we affirm this as home, then we need to recognize both our parents. God has parents, God the Father, whatever you want to say, and certainly Earth. Now, I don't know what Islam says about this, but there are some things which clearly affirm creation in Islam. Anybody else want to comment on that whole thing that I've just read? And I'm very happy to have people talk to me afterwards about this. Now, I know there are those who say, I've always thought I'm simply in with and under God, and I don't need to make this other connection. But I feel it's a connection that's fundamental and that we've lost something by avoiding.
But you're not saying that God did not create the earth.
No, no, I didn't say that. No.
So that if God did create the earth, why is that a separate parent from God?
Well, it's the parent that God uses, if you want to put it that way. Because we come through from a... God is the life force behind it. The earth is the parent through which we are born, from which we are born. And every force and every element of we of us comes from earth.
Dust to dust.
Well, that's another way of saying it.
Do you believe, as the Gaia hypothesis, that the earth is alive?
The Gaia hypothesis, for those who have not heard of it, is not a Christian hypothesis. It's a scientific hypothesis by scientists who have analyzed and understood, studied the earth and become aware that earth is far more than just a bit of surface living. That as a whole unit, as a whole planet, this planet is in some sense alive, and that it's full of interactive living forces, and so they call it Gaia, which means earth. Gaia is the Greek word for earth. And the Gaia hypothesis is that the earth is in fact a living entity. And I see no reason not to believe it. I think it's a scientific expression of what I believe is true. Yes?
What is wrong with saying that God is within the earth? Because I see that...
God is what?
That God is within...
Oh, no, nothing's wrong with that.
Because I see the problem being that not necessarily that we think that we're adopted into God's family, but that our problem is that we see God as being up there rather than being within it all.
I agree with that, absolutely. And we talk about that a little bit more when we talk about earth as a sanctuary on Thursday. But you're correct, that's right. Excellent. All right, now what I want to do is to take us from this reflective questioning to a couple of texts that I've just coined the term earth files. In other words, we are searching through the files of our traditions, searching the files to find out those stories that are about earth. Now, this morning in the Bible study, we said the main character of the story that was being told was God. That's fine. But I want to look at texts where we ask the question, what if we look at the main character or the character of earth? Not simply a story about this subject matter, but earth as a character in the story. You follow me? There's a big difference. Earth is a character in the story. Now, I'm not going to start at Genesis 1, but we'll do that one other day. That's a very clear text where the primary central figure is God, or rather, earth. Both of them are central figures. I want to start with a couple of other texts, which may not be, well, the first one may not be that well known to you. In other words, there are lots of texts about earth which we tend not to worry about because Earth is not seen to be an important character, an important story. I believe there are three great stories in the Bible, three meta stories: the story of God, the story of humanity, and the story of Earth. Next to God, the word Earth occurs more often than any other word. It's the central and governing theme. And I would like to turn, for those of you who have a Bible, to a psalm called Psalm 139. Now, you all have read that psalm. And this psalm is very, very significant. Because at first, for years and years, I read this psalm and said, this is beautiful poetry. And very often, because something's poetry or it's metaphor, we easily pass it by and don't take seriously the kind of insight that might be there. Now, I'll read a little bit of it, and then I'll go through it piece by piece, the part. It's from verse, well, the first part in verses 8 to 12 talk about God being absolutely everywhere. He said, where can I go to get away from God? The Spirit of God permeates the rivers, the deepest oceans, the highest sky, every corner of the globe, every corner of the place is permeated by God's Spirit. Then he goes on to talk about humans. For it was you who formed my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb. So the first part of it, he talks about my birth from my human mother. Right? That's a simple, straightforward thing. And the word for form there is actually the word for almost the same as beget. So it's almost like God is a mother in this text, although we don't usually say that. Then, 14, I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderfully are your works. And you think that's it. It's the end of the text. It ought to be. But then there's another dimension to it. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of earth. This text talks about the fact that I am derived from earth. And intricately woven is the kind of language you use when you're talking in ecology about the web of creation. There's a whole sense in which this psalmist has a sense of a kinship and connectedness of me as a born from earth. Not just born from a human. It's got both of them. It's not a piece of poetry. It's more than that. It's a kind of spiritual insight into the fact that human beings derive also from earth. Now that text, we've sung it 100 times, thousands of times maybe. But there's something about it that I believe suggests to me that there are texts which deal with earth. And one of the reasons why a lot of these texts were dropped in ancient Israel, sort of thing you were talking about today with Elah, the reason why a lot of these texts were dropped which connected with earth was because the fear of worshipping some goddess like Ishtar or whatever. Now, fertility is not bad. I think it's a good thing. And fertility as part, and recognizing fertility as part of worship is good. It's only when the goddess of fertility becomes more important than anything else that it's a problem. What we've got here is frequently in the Old Testament, the goddess of fertility was condemned, and often the connection with earth got lost in the process. But some of these texts retain it. The whole sense of kinship, of a linking with earth as a parent. That's the first text. Now, anybody want to comment on it? That text. Anybody have any question about it? It's very simple, yes.
Well, it just made me wonder if the religion surrounding the early Jews perhaps had more of a sense of what you're describing.
Mm. Oh, yes, some of them did. Yes, some of them did. The Canaanite religion, which we tends to get bad publicity, yes, a lot of bad publicity, is in fact full of all kinds of positive stuff. Now, while I think of it, and because you happen to be here, and when Abraham in Genesis 14, Abraham does an extraordinary thing. The whole story about Abraham is a story about Abraham coming to a land. And the Canaanites are the host people. And they welcome Abraham. And Abraham is happy to be there. There's no battles. There's a series of covenants. There are treaties. There's all kinds of things. And then when there's a bit of a problem, Abraham goes and fights for the Canaanites. Right? And then when the battle's over, what happens? Abraham worships with Melchizedek and the king of Sodom. Who do they worship? The Canaanite god El, who's the creator of heaven and earth, sky and land. And it's quite clear that Abraham affirms that his God is the God of Canaan. It's only later that he get a problem with some of the others, but the creator God of Canaan is the very name and God that Abraham worships with Melchizedek, in that place. So there's a sense in which often the Canaanite connection is totally dismissed, but the Canaanite connection is, for Abraham, a very positive one, all the way through. It's only when you get later on that any kind of negative relationships with the Canaanites develop. They get demonized when you come to conquer the land, but before that, they are the host people. They do. Before that, they are the host people. Now, that's a sort of detour, but it's important to recognize that the fertility connections were there, and there's a lot of them in lots of places. That Psalm 104 is full of fertility. God celebrates fertility. And it's a wonderful and powerful text which we could get to if we had not. Any further comments? Now I want to take you to an earth file, an earth text, that's familiar to you. I want to take you to Genesis chapter 2. Now you all know this text very well. Can somebody tell me what the time is? I don't have a watch on me.
26.
So I have a few minutes left. All right, Genesis chapter 2 is a very well-known text. You know the story. And it's a story about what I now call the first family. Story of the first family. You remember there is some ground, and out of the ground there comes a spring, water. So you've got water and earth, and God takes some of this and molds the first human being called Adam. And then God breathes breath into the life of that human being. So you've got air and water and soil. And you get the first life. So whether you like it or not, human beings are from the earth. And that connection has continued on. From the very beginning of creation, beginning of the emergence of humans, we've been connected and emerging from the earth. And that's continued. Now that's the first person, the first part of the family. There's God and a man, a male figure. Then God, and by the way, the name of that human being that's born is called a living being, a nefesh kayah. And that word means the same as an animal or a bird or anything else. It's not made as something distinct. It's a living being, it's a nefesh kayah. It's like every other living creature that exists. So it's made as one of the community of life. Then God decides to build a home. And the home is called a garden, but you see, our word garden tends to be a little bit misleading. When you think of a garden, what do you think of? Rows and plants and flower boxes and whatever else. This is a little misleading to use the word garden in a Western sense. It really is a place like this, with lots of trees. It's a forest, basically. And in the forest are magnificent trees that you look at and other trees that you eat from. So God creates a forest, a rainforest, whatever you like, a forest home for the first people. That's home. Now, who are the people there? You've got God. You've got God as the parent. You've got Adam, and then you've got Earth as the other parent, the one who's giving the life. And in that garden, you have a tree, which is the tree of life. Not only are the other trees, but you've got also this sense in which this is not just an ordinary place, it's also a spiritual place. It's got a dimension of life that's more than the ordinary dimensions of life. Now, I'm not going to go through the whole story, but I just want to make the point about this sense that the first garden story is really a story about family in a home. There's earth and God, human being, and then God has a stream coming out of it, which is a stream with waters of life, which later on are connected with healing and all sorts of things. What I want to point to is, what does God say to Adam? What's his role in this place? And this is a text which I hope you will, if you forget, remember nothing else from today, I want you to remember this text. You've all read it 100 times, but you haven't read it in the Hebrew, probably. Some of you may have. Now, God took the human being and he put him in the forest garden called Eden to do what? And the Hebrew word is to abad and shamar. Now, it's normally just translated till, because the assumption is that that's what it means in that kind of context. But abad means what in other contexts?
Serve.
Right on.
Worship.
Worship.
Care for.
Serve, worship, care for. And shamar means to keep, protect. So what the role of the first human being in that story is to serve Earth. Take care of Earth. Just as Earth takes care of the human being. You've got this mutual nurturing. One is nurturing the other, and so you in turn are to be serving Earth. Now serving Earth is a lot different than dominating, isn't it? In fact, and I will come to that again, in Hebrew, the word to rule is the exact opposite antonym to the word for serve in chapter 2. They are the two opposites of the pole. In the primary story about human beings as a family, you've got Earth nurturing humans, humans nurturing Earth. Mother, the parent taking care of the child taking care of the parent. And that's a powerful text. And the end of the ritual tonight, I will have the lines, go in peace, serve the earth. Because I'm taking it right out of that text. I'm not concocting something. Now, it's important that you see that part of the story then as the part of the family. Now, having told the first human that the role is to nurture and take care of them, then God says, but you look a bit lonely, Buster. I think you need somebody else to be a helper, an otzer. Now, helper is not just simply a secondary word. God is often called an otzer. It's somebody who is a support person. A partner is a very good expression for that. You need a partner. And so God creates a whole raft of nefesh kayim, living beings, like this nefesh kayim called Adam. So he brings all these animals to human being, to Adam, to Adam. Not because they're unrelated, but because they're potential partners, because they're kin in some sense. You can't bring animals if it's absolutely irrelevant. There's a kinship between human beings and animals. And Adam then goes, names them all. Now, how many of you have named an animal? I'm sure most of you have. To name an animal is to express affection, bonding, all kinds of things. What's your animal called?
Pepe.
Pepe? I don't believe it. My dog is called Pepe, and he's 20 years old. Yeah, well, he's also my family's dog. Now, we call him Pepe because he was lost in the abandoned cat. Anyway, you love, you have a sense, and he's sitting there waiting for me to come home. He always sits at the door waiting for me. There's a bond that happens, isn't there? For some reason. And I'm not just talking about that. The bond that people feel towards the chipmunks is just amazing. Now, not always to some snakes, I know, but nevertheless, the whole point is that these are part of the family. These are not seen in the Genesis story about the garden, the forest garden, as being somehow or another different, but very similar. Not quite enough to marry them, but still kin and part of the same family. So the family of the beginning is a family which includes Adam and then Eve, the animals, the garden, or the earth, or earth, and God. And that God is part of the family, God wanders around through the garden like everybody else. Now, what I'm trying to say is that this is but one of the earth files that I want to gradually have you look at and ask, if you start with earth as a character instead of simply the background to the story, you'll begin to read things differently. And that's what we've tried to do in a more academic way in this collection of books called the Earth Bible. And if anybody wants to order one or whatever, I can give you a brochure. Unfortunately, they didn't turn up at the bookstores. But you can have a look at it afterwards if somebody wants to. Now, I would like to suggest that between now and next time, what time of it?
10 to.
Well, some questions first about Genesis 2 before I put the final question. I'm not doing lots of text. Sometimes I sort of do too much. I'm just staying with this text now for just a few minutes, and then I want to put a final question to you.
Is that feminine or not?
Nefesh is an ordinary word, but chaya is the word for life, and normally the a ending is a feminine ending, but it basically is the feminine ending of chaya, yes. Okay, any other point you want to make?
Right, in Arabic, nefesh is definitely feminine, yeah. So God created a nefesh life.
Yeah. Nefesh is the whole life, is everything that you are. And there's no sense in which somehow animals are created less than humans here. There's no sense in which, say, humans have got a soul or some other dimension and humans don't. Everything has the life breath from God, and everything is a nefesh kayah. It's all life, and it's all part of the family of God. The family that I call the garden family.
Does that include insects?
Yes. Yes, everything. You see, everything, we'll talk about this connection of the web. Everything on Earth is related in terms of, and our understanding of ecology means that we can't simply say animals are there and we are here. We are part of this total family, which I call Earth community in other places.
Well, when we were talking earlier about what happens sometimes is people feel superior to nature.
Oh, yeah.
And I observe many times that especially kids will see an insect and they'll stop on it right away. And I often wonder what...
They emulate their parents.
Yeah.
What happens? I mean, if you have a child and you begin to relate to that child differently with regard to animals, it's just simply that there's a tradition that that's what we do with animals or with insects or things that... But in fact, they're part and parcel of the system, unless there's something introduced to your area that's not part of your system. Mm-hmm. There we've messed up all kinds of systems, haven't we? And what we've done to Earth and the garden and the rainforest of Eden, which is all around it, and which we need to be able to even breathe.
Yes.
And, okay, any other comments about the Genesis family, the Genesis garden home?
I think from a Muslim point of view, we believe that the first life came from the earth, from the clay. And then when we die, we'll go back to the clay. So whenever we see the earth, we remind ourselves from the death and the day that we return to the earth.
There's a passage in Job 1:21 where after God hit him with all sorts of things, Job says, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there." He's not talking about his human life. Mm-hmm. If you look very carefully in the next chapters, there is a euphemism for earth, or Sheol, the land. So you have another text that you can point to say precisely that. So, and he was saying, that's just who I am. I'm a human being, and human beings come from Earth and return to Earth. Now,
in the Ash Wednesday service and in the funeral service, we do that
ritually.
Laying over a coffin, and it's, I mean, sometimes people hear it as a curse, but I think at a funeral it's very comforting.
I think we need to reinvest those words with the sense of the positive. I agree. We tend to see ashes to ashes, dust to dust, and oh, that's the end of that bloke. You know, instead of assuming, taking the Job line, you know, saying, I came from earth and I return, and that's my home, and I return to that home, and that doesn't mean I go away from God. That means that I'm with God in earth. You see, and the point you were making. And God in earth is something I will talk about in more detail when we talk about earth as a sanctuary. Okay, any other comments? Yes?
Isn't it funny that we say ashes to ashes and dust to dust, but then we seal the body in a casket very tight and have it filled with chemicals to produce it?
It's very ironic. And when I die, I want. When I was in India, the school principal of the school, the school had all sorts of things going on, the international school, but because it was in India, if somebody dies, you have to bury them next day. There is no, unless you're very rich, you know, the average person. And so what would happen, I'd be walking home from where I live, walking to school from where I live, say 30 or 8 o'clock, 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning to go to work, and I'd go past the carpentry shop, and they'd be making a casket. And they'd make it, you know, in a couple of hours. And it's a piece of wood with a Hessian cloth over it. See? And within a matter of months, it is dust to dust. It's back to where it came from. They don't have the money for anything, but I think in a certain sense it was closer to the reality of affirming your connection with earth. And there was another ritual they used to do, was that they would simply tear the shroud down when they put it into the ground so that the body was free and the spirit was free. That's the local custom. Any other comments about before I... May I suggest before tomorrow then, and as we do this week and people will come and go and there'll be other people coming, is that just as I started to write a letter to Earth, some of you might like to write a letter. You might write a letter to the trees or to mountains or to Earth. If you feel like writing a letter, it can be one paragraph or whatever, we'll see what happens. And if there's quite a number of them, we might print them all up. Say, letters to Earth from Holden. And on Sunday night, or some one of our worship services, we might use those letters. But they'd be letters in which you reflect your faith, and that you're reflecting not about heaven as home, but Earth as home, Earth as parent. Something that's meaningful to you. So if you'd like to write one of those and share it with me before next week, I mean before tomorrow, tomorrow we'll be talking about Earth as mentor, listening to Earth as our teacher, not just our parent.
I've often thought of how many places there's construction going on, and we dig up the earth and we take that away someplace, and then we fill some back in. And one time I even wondered whether the Earth was going to get lopsided when we go out of our orbit or something. But it seems like we're always disturbing the Earth somehow.
I still remember a big sign in New York was always there, dig we must. Although in New York, dig we must. They were always digging up. There's a sense in which the less we disturb Earth, you know, the better it is for Earth. And we need to be thinking about ways in which. Let me just announce to you something that I got in an email last week. The government of Costa Rica is green. The new government of Costa Rica is green. Mm-hmm. And they have declared publicly in one of their first declarations that they will have no mining, no fuel, fossil mining, none whatsoever in the country. And they will have no certain open-cut mines that are destructive. And so it's a fascinating development. Not whether any other country will ever, ever follow suit. It's a powerful and important statement, but right before the Earth Summit, which is happening in Johannesburg this month, in August. And if those of you are interested, there's another thing you might be interested in. Some of you probably know about it, the Earth Charter, which is about trying to affirm. And this is a United Nations charter that's being proposed as well. But that's another, I'll talk about that later. Now, any final questions or comments? May I then urge you, if you're interested, to think about writing a letter to her the way I did and see whether or not it's meaningful to you. If it is, share it with me and we might put it all together in a little letters to Earth from Holden, because there's something about Earth here. I sit and look at that mountain peak and the presence of Earth sort of flows over me. Go, Earth children.